Hi, everybody. This is Eve Harrow on Rejuvenation for the Land of Israel Network. Today is November 27th, 2016, the 25th day of Cheshvan, 5777. We're welcoming a new month this week, the month of Kislev, the month of Chanukah, the month of our candles, of our festival of lights. So it was with no small sense of irony and grief that we've been living here in the land of Israel for the last few days with fire as a destroyer, as the other side of it. And I'm not even sure that a lot of you listening have heard what is happening here. It seems that the world, interestingly enough, has decided to ignore this because maybe there's no way to spin it to make Israel look bad. So best to not discuss it. Although we do have neighbors, very good neighbors, countries around us and the United States who have sent fire equipment and airplanes to help us. So that is, you know, the light in the darkness in the midst of all the fire. Yesterday on Shabbat, we saw a fire being started not far away from the community in which I live. And I even picked up the phone and called security, something that I don't do on Shabbat, use the phone. But we're all just a little bit more aware. Normally, I probably wouldn't have done that. I just would have figured someone was burning their garbage. But we're all definitely on heightened alert now. We see how easy it is for evil people to do what they want to do, and to, you know, for not many people to bring a country to its knees. It's a little bit humbling. It's a lot humbling. And I hope that a lot of lessons are learned from this. But, you know, it gets me thinking about fire, about, you know, the elements in the world can all be used for good and for bad, right? So fire can warm us and cook our food, but it also can destroy. And we need, of course, water. We need water to drink, but we can also drown and there can be floods. And the same thing with earth and the same thing with air. And, you know, that the Torah talks about this. The Torah gives us, as I say all the time, so many beautiful messages, that a strange fire killed the sons of Aaron, right? Nadav and Avihu. And there, in Judaism, as opposed to a lot of other religions, there are very few things that we are totally not allowed to do. You know, we're allowed to have relations, but in a monogamous relationship, and not only allowed to, but it's called kiddushin. The marriage ceremony is called kiddushin. We're allowed to drink wine. We're supposed to drink wine on Shabbat, and on Purim we go a little overboard, but on Shabbat we make kiddush. And it's this idea of, first of all, we're people, and Judaism is a religion that is made for people, and tends to not ask us to do things that are antithetical to the desires that people have, but ask us to do them in a way that's controlled. And that's how we bring the holiness into the world. And so you see that things that are out of control, that are unchecked, how they can lead to destruction. You know, passions that are unchecked can do the same kind of thing. And so, you know, to see on the eve of our Festival of Lights, this month of Kislev, to see how much is being destroyed. And it was a few years ago that we had what was still the most devastating fire in Israel's history, where the Carmel Forest was burnt down, and it was on Hanukkah, and that was altogether like very strange. 44 people were killed, which is the number of candles that we end up burning on Hanukkah, because we add one each day. And that, which also in Gematria, Hebrew having a numerical correspondent to each letter. So 44 is dam, which means blood. And there were just a lot of kinds of things about that fire. And I suppose that when people look at this, some of the things that are going on, they'll also find that. Thankfully, so far, no one has been killed. People have been hurt, but no one has been killed. And that in itself is a blessing, although the devastation is just so great. I spoke to a friend of mine last night after Shabbat was out, who lives in a community called Neve Tzuf, where they all had to leave, where 15 homes were completely destroyed and dozens of others were badly damaged. And it's going to take a long, long time until they recover from that. And saw pictures of a yeshiva, of a school of Torah learning in Haifa, where the holy books were burnt, but the people got out, and the boys learning there went to get children out of a kindergarten who were learning in that school, because still people are the most important. But we know of many stories where people have gone into, let's say, a burning synagogue to take out the Torah scrolls. So the Torah scrolls for us, they are living to a great degree. They're living, and no, you shouldn't risk you know, someone shouldn't die to get a Torah scroll, I don't think anyway, but the Torah is not just a piece of paper. It's not just some parchment with words on it. It's something much, much greater than that. It's something that is that has kept us alive for a long time and kept us together. On Thursday, when the fire started burning, I happened to be on a tour that I planned already a while back. It turns out that it was Thanksgiving weekend and also the weekend of Chayei Sarah, the weekend that a lot of people were going to be here to celebrate in Hebron. The Torah portion that talks about the life and the death and the burial in Hebron of our matriarch Sarah. And so I knew that people were going to be coming in. Of course, there's people who live here in Israel who always appreciate to do something in Israel in English. So I organized a tour for One Israel Fund, a boycott tour of Gush Etzion, where we would go to artists in the Gush to push back against the BDS and the boycotts, but also to not just to go to a store and buy things, but to see people where they live and where they work. And they were so inspirational. And so the glass and the ceramics and the paper cuts and just even the liqueur that we went to and the care in which they put into all the liqueur, which we all had to taste because it's very important not to insult them. But the last stop of the day happened to be a wood workshop of the Brodies in Rosh Tzurim. And I couldn't help but think, here they were showing us with such joy and really lovingly their creations, Judaic creations in wood, and how they work with the grain and how they cut things out so carefully and how they try and preserve the beauty of the wood. Again, how you could take the same thing and use it either way. You could make beautiful Judaic out of it. And one of the things that they do is make like family pictures where all the names are in it and there's a beautiful wood frame, or like, let's say, for an anniversary, or a challah board. We have our beautiful loaves of bread on the Shabbat table. So they'll incorporate the glass that's broken under the chuppah during a wedding ceremony. They'll incorporate that into a specially made challah board so that the couple every Shabbat has like not just the memory of the temple, which is what breaking the glass is, that we're still not complete, but a memory of their wedding and the joy and the new beginnings. So again, I'm thinking, wow, so they take wood and they create beautiful things from it in Judaica and kind of bring God into the world through their work. And other people will take a tree and use it as a giant matchstick in order to hurt other people, to destroy things. And it's just, it's those choices, people, just choices all the time. You can take the same thing and you can do good with it and you can do bad with it. You can take your skills, your passions, your strengths, your cleverness, and you could become someone who rips people off or, you know, does like manipulates things in such a way that other people are hurt, or you can do it for good. And you can take your money, like, you know, George Soros does, and fund organizations that end up really hurting not just Israel, but other places as well. Or you can take your money and give charity and give to soup kitchens and, you know, give to places where people need it. And it's all about those choices. God doesn't make those choices for us. He gives us all certain gifts. Every single one of us has some kind of gift, some kind of strength. But what we do with it, that's our choice. And, you know, I've been spending some time guiding also in the Old City of Jerusalem and in the City of David, where, of course, a lot of the discussion is about the temple that was, hopefully the temple that will be. And one of the aspects about the temple that I don't think that is discussed enough is the temple is a meeting place. Yes, it was a place to go and to give sacrifices and to go on the holidays and, you know, to thank God for the things that we have and to worship God. And on a daily level, of course, the priests and the Levites had their work. But on the festival times, it was an opportunity for people to meet other people. If you were a shepherd, if you were a farmer, if you lived in a city, if you were in a scholar, chances are that you did not meet too many people that weren't like you. Like today, think about it, right? In our communities, we tend to more or less hang out or in our workplaces with people who are similar to us. And what the temple did was bring people together. And this is how you forge an am. This is how you forge a nation. I've spoken about this before. Is by seeing people who are different than you are, is by hearing thoughts that might make you uncomfortable, that are different from what you believe in. And I firmly believe in the older I get, I believe it more and more and more, that we need to do that. We need to do that because it's not healthy to just sit and essentially talk to ourselves The world is becoming smaller in the sense that we know now what's going on in real time on the other side of the world, things that you would have never known or would have taken years for you to find out. You can now find out instantaneously. And in order to appreciate other people and to be able to see the world through their eyes in a good way, it's important to meet different people. And also, but also in order to understand the dangers out there, we need to hear what other people are saying and not ignore it. And so, you know, like where I live in this part of the world, really horrific things happen, okay? Like mothers, just like me, I think, but they send their children out to bomb other people, right? They put bombs on their own children and send them out as living bombs. Or others, you know, drop gas on their own people and gas their own people to death and chemical weapons. And I cannot understand how someone can do something like that ever. But I need to know that it's happening. I need to know that it's happening because these people are going to try and come after us. And so in a good way, we need to meet people all the time. And also for keeping ourselves safe, we need to do that. So I was thinking about this week because we are reading a lot about the safe spaces on campus, which means everything but, and the places on campus where the kids like can't take it and they had to cancel classes because they were so upset about the elections. And essentially their safe places are places where things aren't discussed and where they're just kind of sheltered into believing that their opinions are the only ones that matter, whatever their opinions are. And anything else that happened was just kind of a blip of insanity on the part of the rest of the world. It's not very healthy. That's not going to really make them into capable adults. And I see that the older that I get and the busier that I get, I don't know if I have any safe spaces anymore. Ironically, after moving to Israel and after becoming a tour guide, I now meet many more different people than I ever would have met had I stayed in the United States in wherever community I lived, again, or wherever I did, whatever job I had or whatever synagogue I went to. I would have been most of the time with people very much like myself. And here in Israel, because of the profession that I've chosen, guiding for sure, but even interviewing people on the radio, I meet people all the time who are different than I am. I need to find common ground with them, but I also try, as anyone who's been with me knows, to create a bigger safe space for them by saying things to them or explaining things to them that initially aren't comfortable, that make people think about things that perhaps they'd rather not think about or just never thought about, not even in a bad way. Just like to think, the greatest thing that someone can say to me pretty much is, wow, I never thought of that before, which makes me happy because too many of us just are sheltered in our own minds and we can't do that. The world is too interesting of a place of all the different people. And it's really, I think, the privilege of my life to be able to take people who are different around and expose them in whatever way works for them to the glory of Israel, to the Jewish people, to our history, to Jerusalem, but to obviously to the Tanakh, to the Bible, but in a way that means something to everybody. And I think that I'm grateful to be able to continue to do that, even though sometimes I'm uncomfortable when I first come across some idea and then need to share it, because I don't just come across ideas and then not need to share it. Like one of the things some people have difficulty with, and it was in my head because it happened this week, is when I explained to them that it's possible that the burial site of Rachel, our matriarch, is possibly not outside of Bethlehem where traditionally has been. So I spoke about Chai Sarah, and I talked about how people went down to Hebron on Shabbat. So the Tomb of the Patriarchs is most definitely the place where the patriarchs and matriarchs were buried. And the Tomb of Joseph in Shechem is where Joseph is buried. But there's a question mark over every other burial site in the land of Israel because there hasn't necessarily been a continuity of knowing who was buried there. And the same happens even with Rachel, our mother, that there's another site north of Jerusalem in the tribal allotment of Benjamin, which actually makes more sense because she dies giving birth to Benjamin, as opposed to the area near Bethlehem, which is the tribe of Judah, with which she's not connected at all. Judah is the son of her sister Leah. And there are other ideas about why that possibly could be Rachel's tomb. The famous verse from Jeremiah, Kol Berama Nishma, that Rachel is weeping, that the children are going into exile, and God is furious with us, and everyone beseeches him to let us back in, and he doesn't listen but he listens to Rachel, and that says, your children will return to their borders. So, and this is why it's so important to know Hebrew. Kol Berama can mean, and is very often translated, if not always, as a voice on high. Rama is heights. But Rama is also a place. It's the hometown of Samuel the prophet, which happens to be right there in that area where these large stones were found that some people think may be Rachel's tomb. And so, but when I say this to people, especially people who very much like praying at Rachel's tomb, which incidentally, so do I, some of the best prayers that I've ever said and the best connections I've ever had happen at Rachel's tomb. So some people get really upset. And I have to remind them that in Judaism, we don't pray to people. We go to graves in order to inspire us that the people whose grave we were at was an amazing God-fearing person, and that inspires us to also want to come close to God because we love that person and we're thinking of them and we miss them, but we appreciate the fact that God gave them to us and the things that the time that we had with them and all those things in order to connect with God. So these places are there. We need to remember the ultimate goal. The ultimate goal is to connect with God. And I think sometimes people of all religions forget that, get bogged down in some of the nitty-gritty of the religion and the rituals of the religion, and forget that the ultimate goal is to connect with God. So like, I have connected with God, and I've had some of the most unbelievable spiritual experiences in my life in Costa Rica, and in places that are not synagogues, and places that are even far away from the land of Israel, which I had to say was a little bit shocking for me the first time that it happened. And I take people to Shiloh, and obviously to Jerusalem, and other places where, let's say in Shiloh, the tabernacle was there. And people will say to me, can we walk here? Is it a holy place? Which happens to be a great question. But according to our sources, the Shekhinah, which, and Mishkan is the word in Hebrew for tabernacle, and the Shekhinah is the word for God, God's essence. Shechen is a neighbor, Shekhinah is a neighborhood. The presence of God is gone from Shiloh, and there are those, many, who will say that it was gone from the Temple Mount also after the temple was destroyed, but it's still a holy place because it was once there. And that's why when we go onto the Temple Mount, we have to be careful and not walk in the place where the Kadosh HaKadoshim, where the Holy of Holies was, which is where the high priest would go on Yom Kippur and make his special prayers to God. But we all have, as opposed to safe space, the safe spaces that I just think are so ridiculous, we all need to have the spaces within us, which is where we connect with God, that we take with us so that no matter where we go, it can be a spiritual place for us. It doesn't have to be necessarily one different spot. At any point in our lives, we can feel God. And so many of us have had that happen already. I've had that happen to me 14 times in delivery rooms, 7 times when I gave birth to my own children, and another 7 when I was in the delivery room when my grandchildren were born. And God was right there. And anybody who's listening to me who is in the delivery room, I hope you're smiling now and you know exactly what I mean. When a baby is born, yes, it may be a nurse or the father or whoever is cradling that baby first, but you know exactly whose hands that baby is in. And you know exactly where God is at that very moment because it is an absolute miracle. And many of us have had personal miracles, personal joys, where we felt that for us, that was a God moment. And that becomes maybe not necessarily a holy place. I wouldn't say that the beach at Costa Rica, where I had a tremendously spiritual experience just looking out on the Pacific Ocean, would I say it's a holy place for me now? Is it hallowed ground? No, but it is the place where when I think about it, and I listen to a song every morning. I now listen to a song that was playing at the time because that song brings me back to that place, brings me back to that space, and brings me back to the feeling I had at the time of appreciation of God's greatness, of the fact that he has it all in control, the chaos here in the world that we don't really have in control. We think we do, but we don't. He's really the one in control. Last week, I was thinking about something, and sure enough, my son heard this from his rabbi, Rav Yaakov Meidan, on Shabbat, that one of the things that we're very proud of here in Israel is that we have water security. It's like we're, you know, you go around, you see the purple pipes, which show that the water is recycled, and we have desalination plants. And finally, after all these years of being so worried about running out of water, through man's ingenuity, we now have water security. But the last few days show that we still need the rain. So one of the interesting aspects of the land of Israel is that we really have no river. The Jordan is not a wide river at all. And that monotheism, that Abraham coming to the land of Israel, to Canaan, to the land of Israel, in between the two civilizations, the two large river civilizations, the Tigris and the Euphrates, which goes through a bunch of different names, and Egypt, are the places where there is paganism, where there is worship of the king as a deity, because people are there and they have the river and they have food all the time because they have the water, but they're kind of stuck there also and under that ruler. And here in the land of Israel, we have 6 months where we don't have rain. We have 6 months of rain and 6 months where we don't have rain. And our prayers are full of the understanding that if we are good people, God rewards us by giving us rain. And so there have been, you know, the questions in the last few months, and it's Rav Meidan talked about this also, like, should we stop saying Vayam Shamoa? Should we stop saying the prayer that, you know, if we're good, we'll get rain, and if we're not, we won't, because it doesn't matter anymore. We're less dependent on God because we can just desalinate. And here you have a few days of fires where all the desalinated water and all the, you know, super tankers that were dumping water on the forests and on the towns couldn't stop the fire. I mean, we got it under control. But what would have stopped the fire is had the heavens opened up and had it rained, and it didn't. And it's supposed to rain in the middle of this week, and I hope that it does. But the message in here is very great, that we need to understand what we as human people, as human beings, can do, and we also need to understand what we can't do. And so each one of us as individuals and in our communities and as our countries have to do what we can do, but also with a sense of humility and say, at this point, Hakol Bidei Shamayim. So I want to take this opportunity, first of all, on a personal level, to thank Tabitha and Ben and everybody in the Land of Israel Network, who does what they can, and Jeremy and Ari, and my fellow hosts who do what we can to bring some of the truth out of the Land of Israel that is so sorely lacking in our world. But on a more practical level for right now, to thank the firefighters and the policemen and the soldiers and the other countries, that the pilots of the airplanes and people who have really risked their lives in the last few days to get these fires under control and to keep people safe and the damage limited as much as possible. And I owe them tremendous debt of gratitude. And living in a country that is a country of laws and of community and of things that are set up for the emergencies, for the days where there aren't emergencies. But when it comes to emergencies, Israel pretty much knows what to do. And it's a great place to live. And I hope that those who started the fires, they get their punishment from people, if we find them, but if not that, then from somewhere up high, and that those who weren't actually involved in the fires, but were thrilled and sent out things, hashtag Israel is burning, that A, they lose the right to live in this amazing country, and that in one way or another, something, they will also end up not having joyous times for being so happy in other people's grief and aiding and abetting evil. Because, you know, there are good people and there are bad people and many people in the middle who just don't make a stand either way. So those of us who make a stand for the good are excellent. And those people who make a stand and help the evil are not so excellent. So the choices that we make are so important. The things that we say are so important. And ultimately, I just hope that the fires die down soon and that the fires that we have in our own lives, the things that burn for us in a good way, the love that we have for other people, the love that we have for God, for our countries, we know how to use in a controlled way so that it will light up the world and not destroy it. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Eve Harrow, Rejuvenation, on the Land of Israel Network. I am going to be in the States starting on Thursday. I'll be in New York and in Florida, Los Angeles and San Diego on speaking trips. And so please write to me if you want to be in touch. And always, always happy to hear from everyone. Eve@thelandofisrael.com. Have a wonderful, wonderful week, everyone. Shavua Tov, Chodesh Tov. That's it for now. With much, much love from the Land of Israel.
Founded in 1902, World Mizrahi is a global, Torah-driven, community-focused educational organization committed to Jewish identity and destiny. The Land of Israel Network is powered by the Mizrahi World Movement.
Do you like picking strawberries or blueberries in the spring and summer? What about grapes? If you were to take an experience like picking grapes and move it to the heartland of Israel, this is when an experience becomes prophetic. Young and old, singles and families are all invited on this adventure of a lifetime. I'm Joshua Waller with Hayuvel, and I invite you to join us on the mountains of Israel, where prophecy meets reality. Go to hayuvel.com, that's H-A-Y-O-V-E-L.com, for more information.